Welcome back to the Prepared Mindset Podcast, everyone. I'm your host, Austin. And this week, we're going to talk, I think, a little bit more in depth about performance handgun shooting, something that I think many of us have an interest in and a vested interest in that as well, because we are invested in handgun accuracy. Whether you're somebody who concealed carries every day, and that hopefully that's a majority of you guys. I know it's not always easy or convenient to leave the house with a firearm. However, I the thought that I always have is this the day that I regret it? Then I go out of my way to either, you know, find a way to carry, to find a way to off-body carry, find some way to meet in the middle, you know, so to speak. Like, hey, I want to have a firearm with me, even if that means that, you know, it's less comfortable. Sometimes I stop and I change. Hey, these shorts or these pants or whatever don't work very well for this. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to change and redo my ensemble here and make sure that I am able to carry a firearm. You know, I think it's a really important part of so much what we talk about. And then even if you take that further, right, home defense, certainly and obviously. I think somebody posted it on their Instagram story this morning. You know, what would you rather have for home defense? You know, a shotgun or a handgun? And unequivocally and without any kind of pause or debate, I said handgun. Greater capacity. It's easier through doors and corners. Faster follow-up shots. And anybody in the house can shoot it. A shotgun's great for a lot of things. And I would certainly not try to like take away from the capability or the merits of a shotgun, but it is the thinking man's platform. And what I mean by that is, if any of you guys ever looked into actual shotgun classes, not just, you know, I have a shotgun and I have shot, you know, how you use a shotgun as a defensive tool, being able to download and upload rounds to switch between buckshot, birdshot, slugs, whatever the case may be, right? And understanding the ballistic performance and the penetrative power that a slug has. Additionally, you're limited to like 5+1. So that's, you know, you're talking revolver numbers here now. You're talking a lot of length and weight, which is if you have a small wife or any wife really that doesn't shoot, they don't know how to get behind the gun accurately and effectively. That's going to be a problem. And I don't mean to like lean into any stereotypes around that, but that's just the reality. Is you gotta have, you know, some heft behind a shotgun to be able to wield that thing in a way which you would be comfortable, you know. And I don't love shooting shotgun. I don't. I enjoy shooting skeet with a nice long, you know, 20-inch or 22-inch barrel or whatever. But I do not enjoy a 16-inch or whatever it is security length pump shotgun. It's not meant to be the most enjoyable thing. Yeah, you can put brakes and stuff on there. You can shoot lighter loads, and I'm sure there's probably a better shoulder pad, right, that I could put on that thing. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just easier to get a handgun, because then you can, the gun that you carry every day outside the house can then become a tool for home defense. And, you know, we're going to talk about shooting the handgun more accurately, but what we can do, and what we're going to talk about a little bit more specifically with our guest this week, is the addition of a compensator. And a lot of guys poo-poo on that. You know, we're going to get into it because I think it's one of those contested ideas that was very popular back in like 2015, 2016, 2017, right? Think about days of the Roland Special, you know, and ATEI and at their heyday, which I shouldn't say that. I mean, they're still very popular. I think when you say heyday, it makes it sound like they're on a decline. That's not the case at all. But the Roland Special used to be very popular. Think like, you know, Grand Thumb pre-Flannel Daddy days when he was still doing the black background. He talked about the Roland Special. Lucas used to run a Roland Special. And if you guys don't know what those are, it's just a Glock 19 with an X300 and a compensator and an RMR. More or less. You know, those three things are what people would call a Roland Special. Yeah, to be a true Roland Special, there was, you know, slide work done and stippling and a magwell and I think a trigger job and stuff like that. There was more to it. But people, just as long as everyone's been taking a quad rail to a 10.5-inch barrel, calling it a Mark 18, you've had people putting, you know, a compensator and a light and a dot on a 19 and calling that a Roland Special. But people kind of poo-pooed on that because you would see less experienced or less talented shooters, I guess, with weaker fundamentals would pick up those kinds of platforms, right? They had more dollars than cents, right? That's one of my new go-to sayings. They would go buy this Glock for $500-$600, then go dump another, I don't know, $1,000 or $1,500 into it to make it a Roland, And then they go to shoot it and they have all kinds of problems. Oh, you got to mess with your recoil spring to get it to cycle right. And then it still won't cycle right. Oh, now you got to go from 115 to 124 grain ammo because those things, because of the compensator, they only like to run, you know, hot rounds. So then it becomes this huge investment and this huge problem. And all the while, the biggest issue that I've seen with guys running comps that shouldn't is that their fundamentals are bad. And I experienced that firsthand with my own brother. This isn't a dig. He put a Radian Ramjet on his and having grip issues led to a lot of malfunctions. So there's a lot of myths out there. There's a lot of, there's a lot of myths. There's a lot of, misinformation. That's the word I was looking for. Misinformation out there on compensators. I'm going to sit down with my buddy, Jake. You guys know Jake. He's been on here twice before. He works with Harrington Arms, which is a company out of Ohio. We have a video dropping this coming weekend on YouTube where I'm going to go through a lot of this stuff, right? And show you guys the installation, get a clip of my first shots with this, and some other, you know, bits and pieces. But we're going to get all into all of that stuff because it's important. I think if you look at, you know, the advantages that we give ourselves when we shoot carbine, when we shoot shotgun, when we do anything else, right? We're always looking for the next edge we can give ourselves to be a more effective shooter. And then in a lot of cases with handgun, we don't, because there's this weird irrational pride around shooting a stock Glock, you know, like, oh, stock trigger, stock control, stock barrel, you know. But then you guys, you look at the top shooters, or most of the top shooters, and they're shooting 2011s that have ports drilled into them. They have compensators built onto the end of the slide, built into the frame. I mean, we don't really talk about the 320 anymore, but the big 320s that were out there were the full-size frames, the compact slide, and a comp on the end of it. So, like, the whole thing was the size of, like, a Glock 17, but it had the compensator built in, and people are like, oh, it's just not even fair shooting this thing. So I threw a comp on my Glock 45, took it out to the range. I'll get into all that, but we're gonna cut into all this with Jake in this discussion, and we're gonna talk about it because he's shot a lot of compensators, both from and not from Harrington, and has some insight on this. We talked about it a good amount, I think, the first time he was on, but we're really gonna dig into it this time, trying to get in maybe some of the testing and understanding behind the development that we've seen, like why are these more reliable now, what's changed, that kind of thing, as well as, you know, his opinion, my insights from my first time shooting one, and more. But before I do get into that, because I'm getting carried away here, you guys know how I like to rant and rave about some of this stuff when I get real fired up. But before I do that, I want to tell you guys about some of our partners here at Prepared Mindset. And certainly we have a couple of companies that we work with, have been working with for several years now. Actually, I think just the anniversary of the first partner here came up. I saw it pop up on my Facebook feed, which is our friends over at Custom Night Vision, you guys. It was a great memory. I was actually away teaching band camp. And when I finalized the paperwork, it was like, I don't know, Wednesday or Thursday at band camp, and I was hunting around trying to get service to complete the paperwork, got home and had the device waiting for me, you guys. But you can head on over to customnightvision.com if you want your own device from those guys waiting for you when you get home from band camp, or maybe just work, you know, maybe just work just waiting for you. But head over to customnightvision.com and you can check out all the housings and options they have in stock, whether that's, you know, some L3 1531s, if that's what you want, they have those available for you. If you want to get into building a unit, maybe you know you want binos and you know you want white phosphor, but you're not quite sure. Do you want L3? Do you want L-bit? Is Photonis going to be okay? You know, they have all of those tube options available in their binocular device builder. Further, you can pick from any kind of device that you want for binocular housing. You can even refine it down to with or without manual gain. If you know what you want, if you don't know what you want, whatever, you can pick from things like the RNVG from AB Night Vision. You can pick the DTNVS from Acton Black. You can pick the MH1 from the guys over at Low Light Innovations. The team at Custom has all of that, and honestly, a heck of a lot more in stock. I mean, there's tons of offerings from, you know, Nocturne Industries and other companies out there. They're just fantastic. The Katana, right? What a great housing. And they have all that stuff in stock in addition to single tube housings. So if you're looking for a PVS-14, if you're looking for a Tonto, right, they have those available. You can build it out with the tube you want, with the specs you want. And the great part is if you don't know what any of this just means, cool. that's not a problem. You can head on over to customnightvision.com. They have a chat function that's built in the lower right-hand corner of the website. You can click into the chat tool, and you can actually, real-time, reach one of the team members at Custom. So Trevor or Ben or Kevin, and, you know, hey, I don't know, is green, do you have anything green in stock? I was told that's better. Or, hey, I was told white's better. Do I want Elbit? Do I want L3? What's the deal with Photonis? I mean, they have a bunch of YouTube videos up, but they're there to give you guys the most transparent buying experience possible. Head on over to customnightvision.com and see for yourselves, guys. Certainly also want to say a very big thank you to the team over at 100 Concepts. You guys, their motto is do good, be dangerous, and live free. You can head on over to 100concepts.com and check out the entire catalog of goods that they have available for you. And certainly that is growing, I think, by the day at this point. They've released so many offerings in the past week or two here. You know, Smith loops, and they're always, you know, doing new stuff with the light caps and the scope caps. You know, those of you guys who've been around since the original, the OG, as the kids say, right? Light caps, know that since then we've advanced past the Ranger bands to the shock collars. We've got the ruggedized material they use now, so it's a little bit more flexible, more grip to it, a lot quieter, right? That material used for their scope caps, hex caps, light caps, all the good stuff they got going on there, and a heck of a lot more. Pack Scrim, their chem light kit, the Fife loop, which, you know, a lot of people make fun of, but it does sell out every time they get it more in, you know, more in stock and fulfilled through the website. Again, it's 100concepts.com, you guys. Head on over to the website, check out everything I got going on, and support one hell of an American company. So thank you to both our supporting and presenting sponsors for this week's episode and discussion. Those guys are all friends of mine, tremendous humans, tremendous companies making, you know, great products, offering great service. You know, can't recommend them enough. I was a customer of both those companies before I ever partnered with them. So, but like I said, talking with Jake this week from Harrington Arms, Jake Hosevar, he's been on before. He runs with Redline Consulting, and actually going to see Jake at the end of next month at the HTA Range Day event out in Pennsylvania. Going to be a really, really good time. If you guys are looking to head out to Pennsylvania and take some classes, it is a charity event that all the proceeds go towards preventing human trafficking, bringing awareness to human trafficking. So you can check them out on Instagram. All the links are there. You can find out all the information about the instructors, their bios, the packing lists, all the information you need for one heck of a weekend, honestly, to support one hell of a great cause. But I'm going to see Jake next month, and thought it'd be a really good opportunity now to touch base with him, talk about my first experiences, obviously, with compensators, because it's been about a month in between the two instances here, and I've had time to think about it and obviously tried a couple of them on the market with a little variety of ammunition, and really, you know, talk about, is this going to make you better? Do people have the opinion right? Do the people have the opinion wrong? I mean, granted, it's just our opinion, but we're going to throw our hat in the ring too and break that stuff all down for you. And by the end of it, hopefully you're not too confused and very well entertained. So it should be a real fun one, you guys. Always a blast when Jake makes it on. Let's jump on over to this week's discussion.
We'll just do it live.
Yeah, the whole thing sucks. Fuck it, we'll do it live. Yeah, right? Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, that's kind of how I felt when I went to the range this week. After I knew I was supposed to do like warm up rounds, or like, you know, run 500 through the barrel. Or I know you guys have like an official recommendation of 500 rounds through the gun and the barrel, right?
Official, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I did not know about that.
Yeah, I just put the compensator on and said, "The hell with it, I'll do it," and it was magic, dude. We're totally recording about it right now, by the way, too.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. We can talk about all this. It's so good. These are, honestly, these are good questions, as I hope people watch this. Because I work in customer service as well. And in your defense, dude, I have these questions come in all the time. And they're like, hey, is it really 500 rounds? And I'm like, well, it depends. If it's a Glock, you can probably get away with murder. You know, if it's PDP or the TP or the... Canic series, like the Meta series, they're habitually oversprung. They're great guns, but they come from the factory oversprung. So you're gonna have to put at least 500 through the barrel.
Yeah, I mean, my 45 has probably had at least 1,000 rounds through it. I've had it a year, and I don't shoot a ton, but at least 1,000 or 2,000 rounds. So I felt pretty confident. I was like, you know, I wouldn't feel bad about this with a regular barrel. You know what I mean? So like the comp on it, like so you guys did a great, I think it's Corey did the video on the install for the comp.
Corey.
Yeah, I definitely went back and like readjusted it like 9 times. I was like, oh no, is that right? Oh no, is that right? Like just trying to get the fins lined up perfect with it and stuff. And then I got to the range after I did like the first 6 rounds. I looked at it. I was like, shit, is that thing cocked? And I like looked and I got like my stupid little silencer shop oven mitt out or whatever that they give you, you know, and I'm like, nope, it's not moving. Like I'm just seeing goofy shit. And dude, yeah, thing ran pretty damn well, honestly. I was
All right. So
pretty tickled
actually,
with it.
before you're gonna do it, I was gonna say you are the perfect litmus test right now, because how long have you been shooting without a compensator?
7 or 8 years.
All right. And I know the day you texted me, you're like, hey, I ran 100 rounds through it, but here's where I'm at. So even just 100 rounds in, what is your feedback from, let's just not even say Harrington comps alone, but just from comp, no comp to a comp, what's the
Yeah,
gist?
because I shot my brother's ramjet about a month ago, and I only put like 10 or 15 rounds through that. But in general, it just takes, and you may have said it this way when I thought about this. I think you may have said it this way when you were on the pod before. It kind of just takes the edge off, and it makes it a little more enjoyable to shoot. Like that, especially with the 45, where it is a shorter barrel, so you feel a little bit more snap to it than like a 17 or something. That really isn't there, and it smooths out that recoil impulse. For me, it's kind of like when you put a suppressor on your rifle, right? Like and you can, well, at least I tuned mine, so I have an adjustable bolt carrier group on my carbine, and it smoothed everything out tremendously. That's kind of the same feeling that I got when I put the comp on this, is that it just smoothed everything out. And it's not like where you can see some videos online of like 2011s where you can just watch how slow that fucking slide moves sometimes, where you're like, is that gonna go back in the battery? And it does. But yeah, it makes it very enjoyable. It takes away, I would say, some of the muzzle flip, some of that felt recoil, that kick, you know. It's a very enjoyable addition if you're somebody who knows how to shoot competently. I'm not saying you gotta be like a grandmaster, because I sure as shit ain't, but it makes it a lot more enjoyable.
Sick.
And I was kind of saying this in the beginning too, because how long you've been shooting for a while now. What, 10 years?
Oh, dude.
At least.
I mean, I had gotten to shooting seriously at like 19.
Okay, yeah, so around a decade. And within the last 10 years or so, like we saw, like you know, the Roland Special was like really big, you know, and then we saw that this like wave of internet influencers, I think, and I could be completely fucking wrong, you know, where people were like, oh, don't get a compensator because you don't need it. Lucas Botkin told us you don't need it. And you don't. Like, if you're actually just trying to learn how to shoot and shoot to a good standard, right? You don't need a compensator to do that. 100% full stop. You don't need it.
Agreed. Completely agree.
And people got real on board with that, you know, because I think we had that wave. Everybody who wanted to shoot bought a Glock and then spent a grand turning it into a Roland, you know, imitation Roland or whatever, right?
Dude, yes, dude. The free 2020 days.
Yeah, you put like a worse comp on there, and you can't afford the X300, so you went with the Streamlight, and then maybe you had a dot, you know. But guys weren't, you know, I feel like the technology wasn't there, and hopefully we can get into this. Maybe the
We can.
technology wasn't there, and then some of the understanding really wasn't as well socialized as it is today. So guys were like, oh, you gotta fuck with your recoil spring. Oh, you can only run.
100%.
You have to
Dude,
run
there
hot
is.
ammo. And we got to this thing that in the community, people are like, oh, you shouldn't run a compensator. That's, you know, you don't need to do that. You got to just run a stock Glock. And now I'm like, bro, why? Like, we don't do that with anything else. We put all kinds of goofy shit on our rifles. I upgrade my cell phone every fucking year. I don't do this shit in any facet of my life where I go, hey, you see my car? 13 years old, bro. Sick, right? Like, no, you fucking upgrade when you can afford to upgrade, because we like nice shit. Like, why? yeah, why the handgun thing is so different. It was like this weird flex. We all convinced ourselves that we just didn't need an aftermarket trigger or a compensator, or until 2011s came around, then we all need them.
Yeah, that was like the days of like buy a $400 Glock and then $1,000 in training. That's when that saying was like super popular. Or buy a $400 Glock and $1,000 round or $1,000 in ammo. I know that was like a big thing, the pre 2020 days, the James Yeager days, you know. Goodness gracious.
And I just feel like the technology's come along. You know, I think I saw a video. I can't even tell you which one. Maybe it was the universal comp that you guys have at Harrington. I think Corey was talking about it, and testing and port sizing. And so you work in that space of the industry, obviously, with Harrington.
Yeah.
What can you talk about the testing process at all? I mean, I don't know if you, I don't want to give away any,
oh,
like,
100%. You know, no, there's secrets, there are no secrets in my opinion to, and in my opinion, well, this is our opinion as well. There are no secrets to a testing process because I don't know, in my opinion, if you're trying to put a process out there and then make it essentially classified, especially with something like a compensator, it's like, well, how do we know if your process is therefore vetted? So there's no like secrets with our testing process. Just throwing it out there. So ask away, bro. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so how does that, like, when you guys get an idea or a new model handgun comes out, but you pick something, right? It could be the Echelon, could be maybe next generation Glock goes back to the whatever, the flat front, you know, and you gotta, like,
yeah,
you know, so a new handgun comes out, right? And you guys decide, hey, we need to, that's going to be the new hotness, or maybe just a good competitor, right? We need to offer a compensator in that space. How do you determine, you know, hey, what, how many ports do we need? What size porting? Because I know I imagine if it goes too large, that becomes a problem. Too small, you don't get enough recoil mitigation, and that leads to different issues and things. So, like, and I think it's gotta be part of it, right? Cause like 15 years ago, you had companies all making the same looking compensator, but they didn't all function equally, and people had way more issues with them. So
it
had to have been a change there, right?
Yep. So in regards to it, like where the process begins, it begins with demand. So where is the demand? Okay. Well, demand is for X gun. Okay. So we, at this point, I mean, we have, God, easily over 40, 50 SKUs, you know? So, we have a lot of dope. So data on previous engagement, I'm using that kind of loosely on where to make port sizes from there. Right. So port sizes, like, let's just use the RXM comp coming out on Thursday with like our Glock comps. Generally speaking, they can be somewhat similar. Okay. Like, we know the RXM has a 19, 18 pound recoil spring. We know your average Glock, especially Glock 19, has your 18, 19 pound recoil spring. So we know the port sizes are going to be relatively the same. And that goes, let's just use Glock as an example again. I mean, that kind of goes for most of the porting on most of the models, right? They start off at, it has to be this minimum baseline porting size. Okay. From there, you can get spicy with it. Like, obviously, again, let's just use Glock as an example, because it's obviously what's most prevalent right now. And I think that's what everyone understands the best. So, like, we have our HD9 XL that is our best performing comp, okay, in terms of muzzle flip reduction. Mm-hmm. And then you have, like, what you have, which is the HD95. I have that as well. I would say it produces good numbers, but it's not, like, the ports are not as greatly enlarged as the HD9. I also think a really important thing to keep in mind is what recoil spring do you want it to work with? So we have to keep that in mind as well. And for us personally at Harrington, it's the factory recoil spring. That is a big thing that sets us apart from, I think, almost everybody else in the industry right now, is all of our comps work with the factory recoil spring. We could make them technically more spicy, but you would have to change it out, a recoil spring. And as I'm sure you probably looked, like, an aftermarket recoil spring is anywhere in the ballpark of, I would say, $80 on the low end to $120, $140 on the high end.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want people to be able to make the $90 investment on the comp and be able to slap it on their gun and be ready to go. outside of that, let's just keep going through the testing process. Then comes like design and aesthetic. So this is a kind of an interesting topic because the day we're having this podcast, we had a very long meeting about where we're going to go aesthetic wise with the company and stuff like that. And as I'm sure you've kind of caught on coming through our website, a lot of our comps have a design that is, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but a lot of the older ones, let's just use Glock as an example again. Our Glock comps have been around for a long time. They kind of have that pre-2020 look to them.
Yeah. Yeah. They got
they,
that.
They have that. Yeah. They have that pre, you know, and people who have been doing this long enough know what knows what that means. A lot of lightning cuts, you know, sort of thing. And we're changing that going forward. But
then how are people going to know that you have a custom Glock if you don't have lightning?
Yes.
How are they going to know?
Corey has adopted a pretty good process, which is like the mindset of less is more.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm totally on board with that. So aesthetics is a big thing, man. And as you know, like performance over looks, I think generally speaking, is always a better thing, right? Like I probably could care two less, generally speaking, two shits less about what something looks like, but it at least needs to be able to perform. If it's gonna look like garbage, hey, if it performs well, I'll take it. Whether it's a car or a compensator, I'll take it.
Didn't you just post a custom Glock on your Instagram story though?
Yeah, buddy.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So like in that sense, it makes sense to me. Now aesthetics is a big role. So like the design process, I think, is where we have a lot of time tied up. So especially now, I feel like aesthetics are a big thing in later times, especially like playing around with Instagram, playing around with marketing. People really care about what something looks like. I mean, don't get me wrong. As you know, the performance side is a big thing, but people want right. something that looks sweet as well. From there, we generally will make a handful of prototypes. So that'll be a multitude of porting sizes, etc. That porting size stuff is not really my side of the house. We have an engineer that does all that. Honestly, at some point, it'd probably be a good thing to have him on if you want to get the nitty-gritty science of porting and how the sizes and all that. Him and Corey and Dylan mostly work in that field. I have a very general understanding of it, so I'll kind of explain that we do. But I will say, man, from the outside looking in, we spend a lot of time on the aesthetic side because we want a comp to look good. We kind of know what it takes for it to perform well, but we want it to look good as well. And it's hard to do because you don't know where someone's going to go with a gun. Like as with a Glock, as you know, from the factory OEM, there is nothing aesthetic about a Glock. Like not a single thing.
Yeah, it's
you have some like front serrations and that's what you got, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and some people appreciate that. Like I've always thought that Glocks look, I mean, they are ugly, but I still like the overall simplistic, sure, clean, you know, look to it. A lot of people are like, I would never carry it, it's too ugly. I go, that's the dumbest reason to not carry a gun ever. But I understand it, you know, like you're spending money and, you know, we've certainly seen products in the industry, right, that just look, just like there's a couple lasers getting ready to come out where I'm like, dude, who drew this? Your 5-year-old? Like, this looks awful. And
yeah, it sounds horrible to say, but aesthetics do play a huge role in things. It is. And we've kind of caught on to that in the last year or so. And we're like, all right, we kind of need to buckle down on our looks and our aesthetics and our presentation. And I know that from the outside in, that might sound weird to hear, but I mean, you know, you've been doing this long enough. People really care about that stuff. So the next step of the process is getting, you know, typically Emmett will 3D print it, put it on the gun, and then let it kind of everyone take a look at it. So like, he'll bring it over to Corey, Dylan, me. And dude, honestly, our 3D printing is on point enough to where you can get a general idea what the comp's going to look like on the gun. So you're then getting a physical representation of, okay, like this is probably going to look pretty sweet. I remember looking at 3D prints of the RXM comp originally, and then some of our prototype magwells we have coming out before we actually had prototypes made. And I was like, okay, this is pretty sweet. And then from there, we send them out to we normally, we can make some in-house. Sometimes we send it out to a third party. And once we get him back, then it's just the testing process from there. Emmett and sometimes myself will go to the range and we just dump ammo through the comp, man. Our standard is at least 5,000 rounds. So
in one day?
No. Normally, okay. We'll do a thousand.
That's a lot of shooting.
Yeah, I think me and Emmett, when I've gone with Emmett, I know Emmett has done 600 to 1,000 himself. I know we every time we go, we do at least 900, 1,000, 800 in that ballpark.
Yeah.
And, dude, it's back to back. I mean, it's not the it is definitely not slow because we're on the clock. We got to get back to work. I have stuff. I have to get back to work and, do sales stuff and customer service stuff. So we go there, we burn it down, make sure everything's functioning as it should. And then they'll gather recoil data through a ransom rest. So we have a whole video on our YouTube channel about what that process looks like. Like I said, when this all started, this is not Secret Squirrel stuff. And it shouldn't be. Like, it should be very open about what your testing process is, your vetting process for compensators, especially. When anything that's performance-driven, it needs to be openly talked about. So we have a whole video about that. I would encourage people just to go to that video and look at it. It's going to be a lot more explanation-wise, a lot better, and data-wise, a lot better than what I can do over the podcast right now. But we have a ransom rest that our engineer put together. We have a way to digitally track muzzle flip and all that. So that's pretty much the testing process for us.
Because it's a proven science in that, recoil mitigation is obviously it's helpful. It's just, I think it's a bit of a balancing act. Like you were saying, with knowing the recoil spring weights, you understand kind of like how to back into port sizes and things like that. And I don't know, but I honestly believe that's where the biggest misses were and why over time we've gotten better at that is not, and I'm going to say like you guys as a company, I'm saying as an industry, because now you look at these high end guns, and they all, there's slides from, I forget the name of the company. Like you can buy Glock slides that have, like the porting right in front of the front sights and stuff. You can
100%.
Buy,
yeah.
Like the Vantas and stuff and the Staccatos that have, they have compensators and ports and stuff built into the gun and they run reliably as shit. We no longer have to accommodate some of those. And I remember I asked you about it too. When I think the first time you're on, I'm like, hey, do you have to swap out your recoil spring? Do you got to play with your ammo? And that was my biggest concern. Both when my brother showed up at my house and was like, here, put this together for me. And I go, when did you decide to buy a ramjet? And what the hell?
You're right.
And then first rounds with it, finding out he had issues with it, but it wasn't really the ramjet. It was him and his firing grip, and I think that it all just aids to, or adds to the mystique, if you will, right, of shooting with like compensation to your handguns, because we've had so much bad publicity, I guess, for lack of a better term, right, over the past 10 years. And then now it's like finally come full circle. And the weird thing is that like on the competition side, I don't know that it really ever went away. Like you see guys burning it down with guns that are ported, comped, you got, lightning slides, you got no irons, like everything. You shoot competitions. How many guys out there are running guns that are modified with some kind of porting or compensator?
Yeah. Especially in open, pretty much everyone, you're not seeing anyone shoot a ported or a comped Glock in open, unless it's just their carry gun and they're there to get reps. It's typically tricked out to the nines. Even in carry optics, even in limited optics that I shoot in. You're still getting guys with tricked out guns. Obviously, it depends on your seriousness of where you're at with the sport, and then also like where you're at in your shooting journey. But generally speaking, I would say you're very accurate, very spot on.
Yeah. And if you're somebody who already knows how to shoot, why not take the step to give yourself that advantage?
I will say this, man. To address the stigma about comps from early on, just so people have an idea, like what we're talking about, pre-2020, like 2017, 2018, a lot of like big Glock companies from then. You might have to help me out with this, like Agency Arms, Zev, There was one other big. There was the big three. It was
Oh.
Agency Arms, Zev, and
Salient.
Salient. They were making their own comps, right? And to their credit, the comps were so effective that the guns wouldn't cycle. Okay. So, I mean, the greatest sign of a compensator, this is generally speaking, is sometimes for it to not cycle. That means it's doing its job, but that means, unfortunately, something has to change or something's wrong. So, with a lot of those compensators, people were buying them from Agency, from Zev, etc. And normally, Agency and Zev were putting those on guns that they built from the factory to the consumer. So they had the adjust recoil spring, etc. When you buy that and put that on your stock recoil spring from the factory, let's again use Glock as the example here, it's not going to function as well because the port size are set to maybe a 12 or 14 pound recoil spring. So that is kind of where the stigma came from, compensators being unreliable. They're kind of shoddy, effective, but unreliable, you know. So now fast forward to modern times, I mean, or 2025, let's just say, as I'm sure you've noticed, 2025, in my humble opinion, is the year of the compensator, man. Everybody and their mother is cranking out a compensator. Like
Yeah,
everybody.
I just had a buddy. Now I did put up pictures in my Discord on Sunday when I hit the range. This morning I had another friend drop in there and go, "Hey," and it was a picture of his shopping cart, probably from Radian, and it had the afterburner and whatever the ramjet in the afterburner, and then their recoil spring. And he's like, "Somebody talked me out of this." I'm like, "Well, don't buy the recoil spring. You don't need it. Also, here's some other options." You still get those people who are like, "Don't do it. Why would you do something that would take away from the inherent reliability of the firearm?" And I'm like, I don't know that that's an accurate statement.
Yeah, dude, it's not. And I would say it's not just Harrington, it's not just Radian. I would say company industry wide, generally speaking, most people are making reliable compensators. The question is if they're making effective compensators. We are definitely past the point where, especially a lot of comps now, as I'm sure you've seen, dude, it's very common for a comp and barrel combo to be a thing now.
Yeah,
Or at
because
least it's becoming a thing.
you see it from, well, obviously Radian, and Radian just
Right.
they're a high visibility brand. When the ramjet
Sure.
came out,
Yeah.
I think aesthetically it's very pleasing. I think they
Agreed.
marketed it
Yeah.
pretty well. I know Parker Mountain, which I did not realize until I started more, like looking into this, that they did a comp and barrel combo. I feel like there's another one I saw too, where you're starting to see it sold as a like a package deal,
Oh, I mean,
which
there's tons. Safari Precision. I'm pretty sure True Precision has their own comp at this point. I mean, everybody does. So.
yeah, I didn't so full disclosure, and I was like, I think you were painting or something this weekend. I felt bad because I was like blowing up your messages.
It's
I was
okay,
like,
dude. Sorry.
I got the comp you guys sent me on Saturday, and I was like, shit, this is like 3 days early. I could go to the range tomorrow. And I'm like immediately looking on the internet. I go, look, hey, fucking Cabela's has Zafari Precision barrels. I was like, look to my wife. I go, we need to go to the store now. And then I found some less than desirable reviews on their stuff on, I mean, it was Reddit, but it was enough to make me second guess it. And
Sure.
then a different local gun shop we called for $20 more had like the OEM Glock threaded barrel. It's like, can't beat that. All right, we'll be there. You guys close in an hour and a half. I'll be there in 25 minutes. And my wife has a rule for me when I go to Cabela's with her that if we get nothing else, I have to buy her a moon pie anyways. So, we're like the weird people with a Diet Coke and a moon pie checking out, telling them we found everything we were looking for, and then run out the door to go to the gun shop across town.
Hell
And
yeah.
the only difference, I mean, like I don't want to say a barrel's a barrel, but I think for handguns, it's less a thing than it is on carbines. So I didn't feel like I was losing anything other than a thread protector by going from, buying a Zafari to a, OEM Glock. It's hard to beat any of the OEM stuff. Like, I know I'm running it in a
Yeah.
Glock. I feel better doing that. So, and it's like, I don't really care about the thread protector because I'm literally screwing a compensator on the end of it. So makes no difference to me. And got
Right.
it on there Sunday morning, bright and early. As soon as the range opened, I was there. and literally watching my phone for 9:30 when I could start shooting. So
Yeah.
it's really not that bad of a deal to like just make the upgrade, especially because you can buy most of the 19Xs and some of the 45s. I think they come factory, like you can buy the whole thing with a threaded barrel now. It's not a special deal to get one of these like it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you make a really good point too, just kind of capitalize on that, man. Like, this is kind of a big thing for Harrington, and our brand is that is kind of like, especially where times are going now, it's a very glowing positive about us is that you can take any half by 28 9mm Glock barrel and slap our comp on it. You know, like you don't have to now pony up $350+ to have our compensator, you know. So not to crap on anyone else that does that, but I mean that is an upside. Like you said, I mean putting it on is as easy as taking it off, and vice versa. Like if you have a threat protector on, you might as well spend the $90 and throw a comp on there and get some at least some muzzle flip reduction, even if obviously depending on who you go with, it's none or some is better than none. And also to kind of capitalize on like what you said in the beginning when we started this, man, is like you don't need a comp, like you 100% don't. And I don't ever want people's perception to ever change from that. I also don't need +5 extensions on my mags. I also don't need a magwell. I also don't need a weapon light. I don't. Like I don't need those things. But they are all super nice to have because they make whatever process it is, whether it be reloading or shooting under low light, easier. So I think that's like where a lot of that stigma comes into play. And that's like a one thing with the gun community is like we immediately kind of go for the jugular. It's my way or the highway. And people think if you like just because you want to shoot with a comp, it means you're trying to basically cheat the fundamentals. And that's not how everybody views it, especially myself. It's like, yeah, I just kind of, I don't know, I kind of shoot a lot, you know, so I don't like to feel the like, I mean, so especially at this point, where I'm at with my shooting journey, I think it makes the most sense to say, like, if there's an edge out there, why are you not taking it?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have problems doing it with anything else. That's what I was saying earlier. Like, we do it with every other avenue of life, technology. I mean, look at AI. Look what we're using AI for at like at work. I get it all the time. They're like, did you could increase productivity by, I don't know, 80% or something, you know, like just use chat. We use a different one, but use AI to help generate and organize this document. You know, like we take those, I don't even want to call it a shortcut, but we use the tools that we have at our disposal to our greatest advantage. That's what I'm saying. Like handgun shooting just seemed like that one of those last bastions where you were like, I shoot a stock gun. And I think you even said this in the video. You're like, nobody at a competition calls you out and goes, hey, bro, good job managing all that recoil. I'm like, that's never heard a good
It's
point.
I guess to give everyone context, yeah. In our last podcast, I did tell Austin that I was like, hey, you know, whether it's the stage of real life or the stage of competition, nobody comes up to you after an engagement or a shooting and goes, hey, man, good job managing all that recoil. Like, nobody does that. So it's kind of like, I don't know, man. It's,
Dude,
I
I'm gonna
think
do it
going to,
now. When I see
oh,
you
go
next month, when I see you next month, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna find a way to make it super awkward and just tell you, like, hey man, you did a really good job managing all that recoil.
Oh yeah, dude. I don't know. It's like our inner over testosterone man shines through sometimes and is like, people, you don't need that compensator. You don't need that compensator for a 9mm. It's like, you're right, I don't. Yeah, I don't need it, but it's really nice to have. So
But I mean, if you're talking about performance shooting or performance oriented shooting, and I think, you know, certainly you could look at it from the lens of only accuracy and marksmanship, but I think you have to put that under a time constraint as well. And that's where you see some of these, you know, masterclass shooters that can do this really well, right? And I feel like, you know, is it it's I don't know. If those
so if
guys are
you,
doing this stuff, there has to be something to it.
dude, I so this is a really good topic, and I think we're not going to obviously expand on it too much in this podcast, but I mean, I think this is a topic we need to understand. If we're going to pull specifically from the pool of competition, we have to remember those guys at that level are always giving themselves some type of advantage. Okay. Yeah. If they're not shooting an open and they can't use compensators, they are shooting what is commonly known as like powder puff ammo, bunny fart ammo. It's low power loaded 9mm.
Yeah. Okay?
And there's nothing, I am not, let's just make it very clear, I am not shitting on these people by any means, but these are typically this, you know, the same guys I kind of hear chop up the argument when it comes to like, hey, you don't need that compensator. It's like, oh, okay, but you shoot 165 bunny fart loads out of your 9mm. So what's the difference between me shooting 115 at 25 cents a round and you shooting bunny fart loads at 45 cents a round out of my gun? The thing is there isn't a difference. Okay. One of us is saving money and the other isn't. And this is like one argument I'm super passionate about, is because like I get this all the time, because I pretty much, except for when I shoot competition, run comps exclusively, because I don't give a shit about what anyone has to tell me about recoil management, whatever. For me, it's about tension. Okay. So like, let's just use the bunny fart ammo as an example, or let's just use one of my open guns. So I have a 2011 from Javi Customs. It is an extremely customized 2011. He sent it to me as a prototype to test out. I've probably put 6,000 rounds through at this point. I put, in terms of grip pressure, a very minimal amount of input into that gun when I shoot it. Because if I put any more input into that gun, any more input than there what needs to be, I start making the gun do stupid things, like shoot low and left, or completely off target, or completely left. Like my offhand, my non-dominant hand will completely overpower the gun and start making the sights do things that I don't want it to do.
Yeah.
Because the gun shoots so well, because it's compensated, because it's, you know, like all these things, right? I cannot put the same grip pressures and just pressures in general I put in that gun as I put into, let's just say, a Glock 45, even when it's compensated. So like, that's a very extreme example. Now let's use like a non-comp Glock versus a comp Glock. The amount of grip pressure and fundamental input I have to put into the gun is very different between the two for me personally. And that is where I personally gain the most value out of compensators. If the less input I have to put in the gun typically results in the better results on target. Generally speaking, if we're talking about shooting, tension is the enemy of efficiency. So if I have to put more tension in the gun to be able to get it to behave in a way that I want it to, that's probably not as good versus putting less tension in the gun and still getting it to behave the way I want it to.
So how would you, if I can ask, like,
go ahead.
If we're talking about like, something in like fast strings of fire, you know, like a bill drill and stuff where you're trying to be, you know, all A zone, but you're obviously rapid rate of fire. And you, is that a, how, like, cause that's actually something I'm struggling with, is trying to increase like split time and shoot faster without, well, with reducing muzzle flip, right? So I wait for that red dot, right, to come back down and hit that point where I'm ready to try and break the trigger again. Is that, when you say tension, do you think of that, or do I guess, do you articulate that differently than grip pressure?
Not necessarily. No.
Okay.
To me, like, so let's just use the bill drill as a, I guess, an example at this point. Do you need a compensator to shoot the bill drill effectively? Absolutely not. I would say this: gear amplifies skill. Okay. So, if your skill is at et cetera bar, it can probably give you the tiniest bit of edge investing in et cetera gear. So let's just use compensators as an example. Obviously, I would say, like, when it comes to the bill drill, where I see the most value is when I shoot my duty gun. I don't always carry a comp on duty. I have two different guns I've qualified with. One is like a non-comped, what I'm normally carrying the most, and one is a comped gun. The non-comped gun, I feel like it is a little bit more, it is a little bit harder to be predictable with. So when we're shooting a build drill, we're obviously going for sub quarter second splits, because if the standard is, if I'm not mistaken, it's 7 yards, six rounds in under 2 seconds. So in order to be draw and fire six rounds in under 2 seconds, you have to be sub quarter second with your splits. So I mean, what a comp is doing in terms of me doing that, like versus a comp and not comped, I would say is really not much, man. A comp is just making it a little bit easier to process information. What I notice is my comp stays, or my dot stays in my window when I run with a comp, and when I run without a comp, the dot does not stay in the window. I visibly see it leave in the 12 o'clock position. I'm aware of it leaving in the 12 o'clock position and then coming back in from the 12 o'clock position. I'm obviously not staring at the dot, but that little edge for me is what I notice personally, like the difference between a comp and non-comped gun. And you can make the argument, again, like we said when we started this whole conversation, it's not needed, but it sure is nice. It sure is nice to know the dot is floating exactly where it needs to be, and the predictability is exactly where it needs to be. And then the tension is also very different as well in terms of hand pressure, like pressure is put on the gun.
Okay. Yeah,
That's just
it's
where
one
I experience it
of
personally. It's different for everybody, 100%.
Yeah, and it's one of those things I think that when you can like crack that part of the matrix, like people start to see. I'm still waiting for that aha moment for myself. But like, getting to that point where you can run the gun faster, and still be accountable and proficient. And I think
Yeah.
that's jumping on back to like the beginning of the discussion. I think people were trying to utilize these tools, right? Compensators, lightning cuts, all that stuff to try and circumvent the work that it takes to get from point A to point B. Like, oh, well,
Correct.
I'm just,
Yeah.
I'll just throw this compensator on
I
here. I'm gonna,
completely agree with
I'll
that.
shoot you fucking noobs right now. And then it's
Yeah.
like, no, that's not the case. And, building off what you just said, my brother had that same experience. And I tell the story not to rag on him, but just as an illustration of, I'm not just making this up. Like I've seen it firsthand that you give the gun to somebody who maybe isn't fundamentally as strong a shooter. Every two or three rounds is a malfunction until we figured that out, adjust the grip, no longer an issue.
Yeah.
I take the gun, dump 10 rounds through it as fast as I can, no malfunctions. Hey, it's not the gun. It's got to be you, because I didn't have a single issue with it. So if it was the gun, wouldn't it stand to reason that I would have had a malfunction somewhere in those 10 rounds?
I mean, really, that honestly, man, that story alone kind of proves what I'm getting at. You know, like I ran into this a little bit, unfortunately, with people like, in our customer service side, we occasionally have people come in like, hey, I did this, this, and this, and the gun's not cycling, et cetera. And I always kind of can get an idea of, like, what kind of malfunctions were you guys having, just out of curiosity, when it wasn't cycling.
He was having a lot of stovepipes and then one double feed.
Okay. So, like, just from what I've seen and experienced, typically that can relate back to a grip issue when we're talking about a comp function. Because that just means that the slide isn't reciprocating far back enough and it's catching the round as it's leaving the gun. That's where that would make sense to me. Like, yeah, hey, totally a grip issue. So, like, in my opinion, pretty much pro move on your part for picking the gun up and then shooting it yourself. I wish I could do that in the position I'm in, unfortunately, but I did not do that via email. But there is an adjustment, man, 100%, because it's reciprocating. It's because it's reducing the reciprocation speed of the slide so much. There is a grip pressure difference, 100%. And while at first it may be more, especially if your gun's like not broken in and all these things, right? You have to wear in the coating a little bit. Over time, because it's so easy to return the gun to zero and shoot, I guess, really, like a better term, predictively with a comp, it gives you this sense of comfortability, which then kind of starts to bleed into your fundamentals, i.e., you know, relaxing grip pressures more so than you will without a comp.
Yeah, and it's not, and it's different than with carbines. You know, like I said before, anytime you mess with how the gun cycles, right? So tweaking the gas, changing your ammo up, recoil spring, compensator, that's gonna open the door for potential issues.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with your handgun. It's different. I mean, you might have those issues with the carbine, but especially with the handgun. With the carbine, you could limp wrist that and get away with way more. That gun's not going to have issues from poor posture, poor technique, poor shooting,
sure.
Or at least at a far lesser degree than a handgun would. I think, you know, when you look at it, obviously when the majority of the mass of that handgun, especially with like a polymer framed gun, where all the weight is in the slide and that reciprocating mass, and then your grip is the only thing keeping that, you know, stable and stuff. Yeah, it's good. And because people look at the two and they go, well, if you do this on a handgun, you'll have problems. On a rifle, it's fine. And they don't make that correlation that it's you. The only thing that's changed between them really is it's got to be the user input.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a high level way of looking at it. But I really, I want to like highlight the point that like I was one of those people, man. Like I was very much against shooting compensators. My brother asked me about it for years. I was like, dude, you don't need that. Like, go learn how to shoot and you'll be fine. And I still tell people that. I'm like, go learn how to shoot. Don't just jump. Because my fear with it, especially newer shooters or guys that only shoot a couple times a year, is they're going to learn terrible fundamentals. And then they're going to put a compensator on it, think it's going to fix something. And it's going to cause more damage than good. And as with all things, like you have to have core fundamentals established. You have to be a good shooter. You have to be able to... I don't want to use the phrase like run the gun, but you have to be competent and able to shoot that gun well before you take those steps. I see it as like a progressionary measure. I don't, you know, I would never give somebody a fully comped out gun and go, here, learn how to shoot on this. You'll be great.
Yeah, dude, it is a very interesting topic. The whole like not comped versus comped. And I'm going to be honest, like I totally understand both sides of it. And that's why I think it's very important to understand that the argument in and of itself is 100% subjective. You have to approach it from the mindset that pretty much we're approaching it from, which is like, you don't need this. You don't. Okay. But if it makes something a little bit easier, if it makes me not putting as much tension in the gun and then resulting in maybe more effective rounds on target or more efficiency in transitions, et cetera, being cross information on target, whatever, a little bit easier. Great. At a high level, yeah, you don't need it, man. Sure. If you're shooting every weekend, every week, yeah, you sure. I mean, maybe you can make the argument that you don't. I can also, you know, like make the argument that I don't need to drive a fuel efficient car to work. I can just take a horse and buggy. I could just walk to work, you know, like there's with everything in life, there is selection. And, you know, I don't know. To me, it's like, why not? Let's just really much circle back to what we said earlier. It's like, why not take, if the edge is there, why not take it?
Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, if you cut enough corners, you start to hurt yourself, I think, at least if you're looking to fundementally grow. It's the same thing with like super light triggers. I tell people,
oh, not, yeah, 100%.
You know,
yeah,
like stay away from that while you're trying to learn. I think, at least this is how I approach it. Like, you would want to be able to pick up any handgun and be able to run that gun at least, you know, semi-proficiently. You know, there's gonna be little things, you know, creepy, shitty triggers make it tougher, you know, different things, manual of arms if there's a thumb safety, sure. But if you know how to apply good grip pressure and an even trigger pull, you're gonna be in way better shape. And that's why like I cringe when guys are like, oh yeah, I just bought this Glock and then my buddy told me to go put this Timney in it and now I can like he told me I could shoot this thing super fast and it's gonna be great. And I'm like,
Yeah, dude, honestly,
yeah, dude, go for it.
Kind of capitalize on what you're saying. I that's a great point. And we kind of mentioned this earlier where people are like, hey, it's this cheat code. It's like, well, it's not, you know. And I agree, man. Like I spent so much time carving my teeth out in a gun that wasn't compensated that when I went to a gun that was compensated, which were both Glocks, I was like, oh, okay, this is a nice little edge that I'm willing to take the bite on, willing to take the financial bite on. Sure, like I'll take it. It's less feedback from the gun, which means less tension I have to put in the gun. Like, I'll take this. So, you know, it is a very interesting argument, and I very much understand both sides, which is why I feel like the correct approach to it is just like, I don't know. You have to understand that a comp is not going to save you. I mean, that's just really the correct approach to it, but you have to understand that, like, if you invest in the right compensator and the right company, it will provide the data and feedback you're looking for, 100%. And that's where a lot of the comps pre-2020 lacked. So.
Well, and I think because of that, now you have a lot of these people that believe that they shouldn't try it, they shouldn't do it. But have been shooting for several years. Some people very well. They've never tried it. They've never picked up any like a modified pistol and ran it because it wasn't their own gun, and they won't do it to their own gun, so they've never tried it. You know, I went to the range with a friend and shot a the Stealth Arms Platypus. It's like the Glock magazine 2011. Like, cool gun, cool concept. Really cool website. You can spend hours on there just customizing to your heart's content. Waste a lot of time. And I shot it and I was like, yeah, I really like this. Like, this is cool. Now, they do not offer a ported or a compensated model. And that one was, I think it was the government length, so shorter with a bull barrel. And my buddy who was sitting there is like, yeah, I mean, it's cool, but like, now shoot your 45. And I did the same drill, same thing, whatever. And he's like, see, there's no difference there. I'm like, well, I mean, those are like the first three rounds I put through a completely different platform versus the gun I've been shooting for the last like year. So I don't know if that's a fair comparison, but I feel like it's the same thing where people go like, oh yeah, you don't need that. Like, you don't, I kind of look at it now where it's like, you shouldn't really have an opinion on the matter if you haven't tried it. Like, I guess you're entitled to an opinion, but how do you know? Right. And so you actually like, and if you hate shooting a comped gun, cool, take it off. It's easy. Like, no big deal. Screws right off, man. And then what? You got a threaded barrel, put a protector on it. No big deal. Go buy a suppressor. But, you know, have a good time. But like, the number of guys who have the opinion that you should not modify your handgun if it's your carry gun, the guys that say you shouldn't, you know, unless it's a comp gun, you shouldn't try to do anything to make it shoot faster or any of that stuff. You know, it doesn't even have to be a compensator. It can be, you know, some of those like the takedown pins with the thumb ledge. It could be I think there's a you can get a ledge that you can attach to your X300 to give you like extra thumb pressure or something like that. Like, there's little things here and there, and guys will be like, oh, you don't need that. And it's like, have you ever tried it? Why would I not try it? Don't load your gun up with everything, but like maybe like one or two things. I'm not saying maybe it's not a bad idea. Couldn't hurt. At least try it.
No, dude, this is a 100% a valid point. I mean, the just to kind of use the thumb ledge as an example, like the speed cuts, quote unquote, on guns have become quite a thing, especially on polymer guns. It's nice to be able to drive your thumb into something, you know, and have leverage over the gun. Is it needed? No, absolutely it's not. But you know, that's why it's a tough argument to have, is it's kind of in this middle space. I 100% understand both sides of the argument. But I mean, like, I don't know, man. If I guess at the end of the day, if what makes you happy is being that guy who's like, well, all I need is my fundamentals and I'm good. Hey, bro. Hey, I'm here to support you every step of the way, buddy. You know, so all good, man. Like, it's fine. I don't think anyone. I think where the argument is valid to get kind of un like if you want to get cutthroat about it, is when someone is arguing hard on one side versus the other. Then in my opinion, it's like, yeah, that's probably not correct. Like, there definitely is not this is the way. There is a way. So in the a way portion of it boils down to the individual, which is why I said this is all subjective. So.
I wonder if you'll get any of that next month. 'Cause so for anybody listening, and I know I've mentioned this before, but we are both attending the HTA Range Day event in Pennsylvania. Jake actually gets to teach. I'm just going to be a student there. Not that special. But we all get to hang out with him and John at the night shoot, or at least most people, the people that signed up for it. Do you think you're going to get those kinds of questions and stuff? Where people are going to be like asking, do you get a lot of questions about that in classes and stuff? Like, compensators, they see your
Oh,
gun and like,
comp versus
yeah,
not comp. The Glock you saw, by the way, is probably the most pimped out Glock I've had in a handful of years now.
Oh,
Shout out to Defiant.
I just thought all your guns looked like that.
It's okay. It's all right. I totally understand your point of view. Shout out to Defiant Machine Works for that. But I mean, yeah, dude, I do. I get a ton of questions about that, and it's it definitely has become a stigma. And I tell people the same thing I told you, I think an episode or two ago. It's like no one shakes your hand at the end of this and goes, "Good job," you know. And the other thing is too, man, it's such a small investment to get a quality product these days. I mean, our comps are at their peak, not, you know, $99, $100. Why would you not, like, if you have a threaded barrel just chilling there, why would you not slap something on it that can just make things a little bit easier on you, man? A little bit. And, you know, I don't know. Like I said, where I found value with it is the grip pressure thing. And I am like the guys at work make fun of me. They call me the grip goblin because, like, whenever I do reviews and stuff on our YouTube channel, like, a big portion of I always talk about is grip. And it's true, man. Like, the amount of tension I'm putting into a gun that's comped versus not comped is different. And that tension can sometimes reflect results on target. So that's kind of where I come at from it. But dude, yeah, I completely get both ends of it.
Are we gonna get that dissertation at HTA? Are you gonna talk in depth about the pros and cons of grip pressure, or is that not for us?
Wait, what do you mean? Oh,
I
at
don't. I have no
HTA?
idea. Yeah, I have no idea what you guys have planned for the night shoot. I'm just trying to give
Oh,
you a hard
no.
time, but like,
Yeah.
I know it's just a it's a night shoot, right? It's low light, not like a night vision or anything like that. Not specifically, anyways.
So for the night shoot, yeah, it's, I would say the HTA stuff is going to be more rep based. So the direction me and John are kind of going with that is we're going to probably open end question the class at the beginning, like, hey, do you guys want to learn low light specifics, like low light fundamentals, or do you want to get reps under low light? And based off the feedback from that is the direction of where the class is going to go. We
What if
only
the
have
answer is
three
yes
out.
to both, though? What if we want to do both?
Well, we do have a solution for both.
Oh.
We are gonna probably spend, since we only have 3 hours to kind of look at that, we are probably gonna do an hour of, like, you know, fundamentally explaining what's going on, and then the last 2 hours is gonna be execution. There are some things, even just fundamentally, like activating, not activating, you know, photonic barriers, all these things, that is valuable for people to know. And we can normally digest that in 30 to 40 minutes. And then past that, it's going to be people getting reps. If we had a full 8 hours to teach a low light class, it would look a lot different. But
Yeah,
I
of
mean,
course.
we have, you know, 3, 4 hours max to get this out. So we kind of have to let people get the reps in and,
Yeah, I
you
mean,
know, give them
it's
quality drills and stuff in the meantime to do it.
yeah, and it's an opportunity I don't think a lot of people usually get, just to be
No.
like being completely honest. I mean, shooting outdoors at night is something you have to go to a specialized facility for. I know some indoor ranges will host classes, but it's not the same, man. You know, you're not like actually under the stars and surrounded by, well, I guess I was gonna say your homies, but it's in this event, it might be a little bit like strangers, but it's all good. Like, it's just not something that people get the access to. So I know a lot of people are excited to be able to like experience that, because everybody has white lights. Most people don't ever use them though, and like not really, not in a training perspective, purely because of access. That's what it comes down to. I think it's a great opportunity for the event. I think it should be a good time. I
Yeah,
hope.
I mean, and that's kind of where a lot of my thought process is coming with that is, not a lot of people get low light reps, which is why I'm not super caught up in getting into the nitty-gritty fundamental of low light shooting. You know, like, I kind of want to just address what needs to be addressed, like activating versus, you know, deactivating the light, and kind of go from there. Like I said, you can get really down the weeds in an 8 hour class, but given the timeline we have, it's kind of like show people what they need to know, then give them time to hammer it out.
Are you guys getting the full? Well, I'll have to just wait and see. I know last year they think they said it was 3 hours, and then it was closer to like 2.5, and then we had to like hurry up and we had to hurry up and throw all of our shit in our Pelicans to like make it over to the raffle or something. It may have been 3 hours. I can't freaking remember.
Yeah, I mean they told us three, so we're gonna use all three,
Yeah.
100%.
It's weird. That's the kind of stuff when you look back on those memories, you're like, you never remember those details. You just always remember like the goofy guy who walked down the firing line when he wasn't supposed to, or like, you know, the weird, well, I guess not that weird. It's bound to happen. But, you know, that's the stuff that sticks out in your mind. It's never like, did we get 2.5 hours or do we get 3 hours? You know, I can't. I just remember that I was like, we had to park super far away and basically I just had to run to the truck, get everything off, and then go do the raffle and stuff. But it is, for anybody listening who's interested and wants to meet Jake, it's a great time. You should definitely come out and do
Yeah,
it.
100%.
But I'm trying to think if there's anything else are we supposed to talk about, is there that other mention from your guys' product line, or is that
Oh,
supposed to,
yeah, we
supposed
can
to
talk
talk
about
about
that.
that? Yeah.
So this is the first time we're kind of revealing this, but Harrington Arms is releasing a quick detach compensator. It's going to be a barrel and comp combo. It is going to be a complete ecosystem for comps in a barrel. So basically what we're designing is, I can't go into specifics of how it attaches, but we're going to be able to attach multiple different types of compensators and then also a direct thread system for your suppressor. So
In one setup.
all in one setup. So you buy one barrel and then you buy multiple attachments. This has been something we've been developing for, I mean, it's gone through three or four iterations at this point, two or three iterations. And I would say in the last year is kind of when we finalized what we're going with. We are going to be releasing that before the end of the year.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's going to be a whole new ball game for us because it's going to be putting us into a area where we're not really in right now, which is one, let's just say it, like a really high price compensator, or I shouldn't say really high price, but a completely different price point than $89.99,
Sure.
and then
Sure.
also a completely different quality spec as well. So our specs with something like that are going to have to be dialed in, man. We are really tight with our QC right now. Like what we consider a blem, it's really not a blem, but because our standards are where they're at, we consider them that. It's going to have to be doubled down for this series because of how it attaches. So we're going to have our hands full in terms of, in a good way, in terms of selling them, making them, all this. So I'm very excited for the route we're going down with it. I've got to use it. I've put probably the 1,000, 1,200 rounds through the system
Okay.
at this point,
Yeah.
and it's legit, man. It's
So
legit.
performance would align with like your personal expectations, because you've shot like outside of the Harrington catalog. I think you've said you've, I know you, I think you said Ramjet before, and that's just like the big
So I
one, but.
have before I ever worked for Harrington, one of the reasons why I was hired into Harrington is because of my experience on compensators in general. If there's a name brand compensator out there, I've definitely used it. My first compensator I ever bought was like pre-2020, back when Agency Arms made all the cool set screw compensators. Remember those days?
Yep.
That was one of the first comps I ever got for my Glock 45. Then I went to Mayhem Syndicate. Remember when those were all the
Oh
rage?
yeah. I remember that.
Then I went to was I was actually running a Harrington HC9C. It was like a very early iteration of it back in 2019, and then after that that's when I went to the Mayhem Syndicate. Then I from there I got a prototype from Radian is when and then I started I probably have on a Radian Ramjet I probably have close to a little bit over 10,000 rounds through it. So I'm very
Damn.
familiar with
Yeah,
a lot of the
damn.
products on the market, dude. As I was running the Ramjet for like 2 years before I
Yeah.
started working at Harrington, and then when I finally stepped in the door at Harrington, I didn't realize they had all these Glock comps. So I got my hands on these Glock compensators and immediately started using them. Which is why I sent you the AC95, is because of that. I have the most experience on that comp, and to me, it's been the best like middle ground of, you know, muzzle flip reduction, and then also felt recoil. I feel like it's the best in between. So,
what's the advantage for you guys, like, or I guess in general, right? Because you're not the first ones to do it, but with having a not a proprietary, but a specific barrel mated with a compensator, where is the advantage to that? Is it just that you know that you're reducing the number of variables that you might get from a customer experience? So if you bought a cheaper barrel with one of your compensators, it might end up being a poorer experience versus this way you can guarantee that it's going to run better? Or is it a fitment, you know, issue? Or
yeah, I wouldn't say if it's like, I wouldn't say it's necessarily a function versus, I wouldn't say really it's a function thing. It's more of one, obviously, demand. Okay. Right now, the hot thing is a barrel comp combo. That's totally understandable. The other thing is size. Size plays a huge role. And
that's not what I was told. My wife told me that it was not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. The big ones don't fit in holsters, so we don't like those ones.
Precisely.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So ours is going to be a little bit shorter than what we currently offer, because ours mounts the way it does, with having to the set screws going into the neck of the barrel. It has to screw in, et cetera, length, and the comp basically has to be 1 inch or around, a little bit under 1 inch. With this new compensator barrel comp combo, it's going to be a little bit different from that. We're going to be able to make the cuts to the length while still keeping the same performance. Also, address the obvious, it's an ecosystem, man. A big deterrent for people with our comps right now is the set screw design, and I really can't blame them for that. If you're new, like let's just say you're an enthusiast versus an end user, a set screw design can be a little bit intimidating for you. It can also be a lot, because you have to Loctite it, you have to torque it to a certain spec, you have to make sure it's perfectly lined up. If you're a little bit autistic, like what I am and how you are, you want to be perfectly aesthetically, you know, like I get it, dude. Like as a person who was there and knew nothing about nothing, I can understand people's opinions and points of view on the set screw design. It's tedious. It can be, at least. With this, you're literally quick detaching it on and taking it right off, you know? So now if I want, let's just say, you know, we're releasing right off the rip two detachments for it. One is our standard compensator, top port and side port design. So we're mitigating muzzle flip and felt recoil. And then our second attachment is just basically a muzzle weight. So if you want to go shoot USPSA and you don't want to throw yourself right in the open, you just put the basically blank attachment on and you're good to go. Because that's another reason why people don't like the set screw design, you know, is you're married to that comp and barrel at that point. Unless you obviously decide to take it off, go through the process of taking off, you are married to that. It's, the gun is set screwed on, it's Loctite, or the comp is set screwed on, it's Loctite on. You're kind of married to it, you know. With a quick to dash design, you can take that right off and replace it with a blank.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You know, the other thing is it's an offering we don't have right now, and it's going to be kind of like a future for the company. I think if we look at the technology and mounting systems we've seen historically with compensators, it is slowly evolving, man. Like the set screw design is probably, when it comes to handguns at least, one of the first mounting systems. And from there, it has only kind of gone up. You know, we see Radian's, you know, screw-in design. They have a cross-bolt screw. You have Mayhem Syndicate's design. They're called something else now. I for the life of me, can't remember the name of the company. But they have, like, that bead with a spring behind it. There's, like, spring tension keeping the comp in place. Totally, like, that's, again, a completely different mounting system. Parker Mountain Machine, they use a crush washer design. You know, So in my, and again, all these things are, you know, at least perceived as better than a set screw design. And I get it, man. So for us, it's kind of like the future. It's kind of where things are going to go. So, you know, outside of that, you know, for people like me and you, is it going to make a huge difference? No, it's not. It's a product addressing demand, and it's a product that's, in my opinion, going to be where the future is going. Set screw stuff is going to be very long in the past. I mean, dude, Safari Precision, I don't know if you know this, but they make their own compensator. Technically, it's quick detach as well, you
Oh, I
know.
didn't know that,
So,
no.
yeah, I mean, so it's where you got to keep up with the times, especially in an industry like this. You have to keep up with the times. You have to constantly innovate. You know, we're going to keep price point in mind. We're not totally just blowing people out of the water with our
Yeah.
price point. But it is going to be obviously very different from where we're at now. And that's understandable because it's going to be a barrel and comp, you know, so
Yeah.
it's completely
Yeah.
different.
I mean, because you look at some of the competitor stuff, and I hate doing the comparison thing because it's
Sure. Yeah.
not
I
fair. But,
agree. Yeah.
you know, when you look at you'd like round up $100, a little bit less $100 for a comp, to 180 to 200 for an aftermarket barrel, you're already at around $300 for something that was not necessarily designed to mate together in the right way. It's an older design, a little bit like. I think when people put it in those relative terms, like you understand you're going to spend a little bit of money. Like Radian is upwards of 400, you know. So if that's the pool you want to go play in, just understand you, like, and here's the thing with anything in this space, when people start bitching about money, I'm like, look, you got to pay to play, man. Like you want to get the cheapest thing out there, you're going to get the cheapest experience out there. And I gave that shit up years ago. Like I look for performance now, and then I reconcile that against the price and my budget. You know what I mean? Like I don't run the cheapest dot I can get on anything anymore. I did at one point, and I'm a little ashamed to say it. And it's, you know, it's just a phase people go through. But if people bitch about price point on certain things, I've just resigned myself. Like, you know, it's like I'm good buddies and obviously, you know, supported by the guys 100 Concepts. And people tell me all the time, oh, their shit's too expensive. I go, yeah, it's not for you. And they go, wait a minute, what do you mean? I go, no, it's not for you. You think it's too expensive? It's not for you. Well, I mean, like, it's too much money. I could get one 3D printed for $10. I'm like, yeah, you should do that, man. Totally. That's good for you. And when you put it that way, people get real, oh, they get
Yeah.
pretty defensive about it. But I'm like,
Yeah.
listen, you get what you pay for, man. Like, you really do.
So I will say I used to be kind of ignorant like that too as well. And working at Harrington, one of the many things it showed me is the process that goes behind developing products and then also the
Yep.
cost behind it. And bro, this shit's not cheap.
No.
It's not. It's not. I mean, let alone developing a barrel and comp combo. Just the process of R&Ding a product, prototyping that product, then releasing that product to the public is an extensive cost. And you have to, on top of that, pay employees. You have to pay them at a wage where they make a living. Then you have to provide health care to those employees. Like the list goes on, dude. The list
You have
goes
to
on.
pay for the
And
lights and the water and everything in the
yeah,
building you got to be in,
right.
like,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's a lot, man. And I know some people have a hard time. Like I know Radiant gets shipped out all the time, right? Like price is just insane. And it's like it's insane for a reason. It's because the QC is where it's at, the R&D is where it's at, the spec is where it's at. Like it's gonna be the same. It's the same thing we're going through. It's the same thing
Yeah.
everybody else who has to design them goes through. There is a if quality is on the line of any kind, really, the price is gonna follow, man. That's just
I'm
how it
not going to
has to
say
go.
that's, yeah, I won't say that's true for necessarily every company because some of them just jack up their prices because they've been around so long that they can. But
Sure. Yeah.
that's your job as a consumer. Like, be informed, do
Event.
some
Yeah,
research.
absolutely.
Like,
About the
you know,
product. Yeah.
you can't just blame the company. At some point, you're responsible as a consumer too. So, but that's, I mean, dude, it's exciting. That is really exciting to hear because as
It is.
you see a couple out there, but you know, it sounds like yours will be different and an improvement on what's, you know, what's available and things. So I'm excited to see that. And certainly anybody listening, if you guys are in the market for something like that, maybe you were saving those nickels for your, you know, a ramjet. Maybe now you wait a little bit, give yourself a little extra time and Maybe that's your Christmas gift to yourself is a brand new Harrington Barrel Comp combo.
Uh-huh.
Do you guys have a good name for it yet? Like some, yeah, something like you get off like a
we
cereal
do.
box, like the Eliminator or something. Yeah.
Yeah, we do. I can't. That's the like the stuff I can't reveal too much, but yeah,
That's all right. No,
I think we're coming in with a pretty heater name, in my opinion. Yeah.
sick. No, man, I'm looking forward to checking it out. But yeah, man, thank you so much for sitting down with me again. It's always a good time
Of course.
having you on here to cut it up. And yeah, and within like a month's time, we'll get to see each other in person. It'll be good times, good hangs. I think you guys will be there for at least part of Saturday, and then are you
I'll
staying
be
through
there
Sunday?
since the morning. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll be there pretty much all day. Oh,
Oh, you get to see me in morning form, all
hell yeah.
sleep
Hell yeah.
deprived, and yeah, it'll be freaking awesome. Yeah, it'll be a good time, man. But if people have questions on any of this stuff, where can you direct them? Because I know if it's like Harrington specific, they probably don't. I mean, they can go to you directly, obviously, but is there, where should they be reaching out for questions?
Yeah, just hit us up through our support at so support@harringtonarms.com, and then you can shoot us a DM on Instagram as well if it's something like quick. I run Harrington's Instagram and monitor all that stuff, and I customer service bounces, in my opinion, but between both of them, it bounces one through email and then one through our socials. It's a two-part job, so
That is Harrington with an E, folks. Don't message
yeah.
me or Jake and say you can't find it because you
Oh my
spelled it
God.
with an A.
Yeah.
Harrington with an E. So, for those of you that don't, they can't use Google. But,
Super true.
yeah. But all right, man, it's been awesome. We will obviously we'll be in touch, and we'll talk soon.
All right, buddy.
So really cool to be able to actually get that news from Jake and the folks, obviously, Corey and the team over at Harrington Arms about the new product. But I think, if you're somebody who was concerned with performance handgun shooting, I think that was a discussion more oriented towards you and achieving your goals. And if you're like an A class shooter, B class, even shooter, or grandmaster, like that probably wasn't as helpful for you. But I do hope that you at least found the insight to be helpful. Or maybe you have a maybe you know what? Here's the other thing: if you thought that everything that Jake and I just said and everything we got into was total and complete rubbish, then I encourage you to reach out, because I'd love to have a conversation with you if you're somebody who knows what you're talking about. Like I welcome those discussions. I'm always looking for people who are able to teach me more about all of this stuff. And that's what I like about having Jake on too, is he's a perpetual student of the game, as they say, right? Like he's looking for ways to improve himself, ways to get better. I think that's largely why we ended up having this conversation, is that, I've talked to Jake for a while, about performance-based shooting, about being a better shooter in general. And, when we had him on the last couple of conversations, it really was around, hey, I run a compensator, I run it for duty, and, I've gotten looks, he said he got looks in the locker room and stuff, goofy looks from people, because they, hey, you're running a compensator, isn't that kind of a weird thing? But if you're trying to be the best shooter that you can be under the best or worst of circumstances, like why would you not want to take, every advantage that is presented to you? And it's a great question to pose to yourself as well as to those around you. If you're somebody who is, I would say actively against adding something to your gun, because we don't poo-poo on Magwells, guys. Draw. Oh, the Glock performance trigger. Nobody really. Oh, it's Glock, so it's okay, right? Like that gets a pass because it's from Glock, and we're not allowed to question that stuff. And certainly, I don't like. I like Glock. I carry Glocks. I shoot Glocks, and that's fine. Smith and Wesson makes some great stuff. They actually, their performance center comes with porting, and essentially that's compensation, but porting at the end of the gun on their 5-inch version. The performance center edition of the M&P 2.0. That's something that they've been doing. And there's other guns out there certainly that I think Springfield's. Like the XD, I think their race gun has that kind of stuff. I know Canix does as well too. So it's not a new concept by any means. I think really what we're discussing is when you take that eventual leap or step, to be less dramatic, from a competent shooter who's worried about tactical shooting, and I hate putting that label on there, but it's just an easy identifier, right? Into performance and competition-based shooting, and then you really see what a lot of people are talking about, where you're blurring the lines. It's not it's not this kind of shooting or that kind of shooting. It's just shooting is shooting. And yes, you can, there's guys out there like Matt Pranka comes to mind because I just saw a video of him just burning it down with a, I think it was a Glock 17 with an SRO on it, like just crushing it, man. I think it was an SRO anyways. And he's a fantastic shooter. Like, can't take that away from the man. Like, absolutely not. But, you know, I'm sure he's probably shot guns that have that stuff on there. And I know guys that are masterclass shooters. Talk about guys like Rob Epifania or, you know, these guys that are out there running, you know, on Team Infinity and Team Glock and everything, the SIG shooting team, which, you know, the 320s and stuff, those are not, you don't really talk about that. The Staccato shooting team, right, with, I think it's the XC that has the built-in compensator. Like, take the advantages where you can get them. As long as they're reliable and you can get that repeated performance on demand, I think it's totally fair game for you to do that. You know, now, do I think that you need to put, you know, the gas pedal modifications and remove your irons altogether and, you know, put the over-the-top platform to mount your red dot to it? So, you know, like old school style and everything, and, you know, big old weighted mag wells and, you know, 7-inch 1911s and stuff like, no, I don't think all of that is necessary unless you're actually trying to, you know, run a gun for money. But if you're certainly trying to take your abilities to the next level, I don't know why you, here's the thing. Even if you don't keep it, at least try it. The level, the point of entry, financially speaking, is so low now, even on some of these older comps that we talked about, the set screw technology being a little bit daunting. It's, guys, I did it myself. It's really not that bad. It's just two screws. Like, just make sure it's level, you know, that's not that hard. And guess what? If it's not level, you just loosen the screws, adjust it, and retighten them. It's a guess and check process. It's really not that bad, I promise. You know, but for the, you know, and here's the thing, they're about $100 on the website. You can get the blemished ones for like $85, so it's even less. And here's my additional point to that is, guys, why would you trust anything cheaper than that? You know, I know there's companies out there that make $25 and $35 compensators, and you'll throw one of those on your gun and go, oh, these don't fucking work. It's like, well, yeah, for $30, what did you fucking expect, bro? Just like the dudes that'll buy a cheap, you know, Rock Island 1911 and put a bushing compensator on the end of it and go, oh, this doesn't work. Compensators are garbage. And it's like, is it or is that compensator garbage? So all that to say, like, I really enjoyed having Jake on and him sharing his perspective. He's going to be, like I said, he's going to be an instructor at HTA next month. We're making the trip out for the third year in a row, and I am very much looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to meeting him in person and then seeing, you know, a lot of guys who've been guests on this podcast before. I connect with those guys annually at this event, and it's awesome. So, you know, like Blake Flannery is going to be there. Alex Manor, leader of those gentlemen on Instagram, you guys, Joe Fasinella, Gray Fighter, he's going to be out there. Guys who I've connected with online, but haven't met, like Mike Shaw. I think he's OG Street Cop on Instagram. He's going to be there, teaching a class. The guys over at Keystone Tech, who I've talked to a couple times, get to, you know, hopefully connect with them in some of the downtime. Like, I'm really, really looking forward to it. And if I leave anybody off that list, that's not on purpose, by the way. I'm rattling this stuff off the top of my head as I go. Certainly even friends that are going to be taking classes that run companies like Max from Dead Concepts. Check them out on Instagram as well. It's a wonderful event, going with a crew plus one this year. So I think last year we were rolling six deep. This year, I think we have seven. Plus there's another crew that we shoot with and stuff coming from Michigan that's also going out. So another three, four, or five guys there that, it's going to be a really, really good time. Very much looking forward to it. But thank you guys so much for hanging out and listening this week. This is a new concept to me and something that I was really excited about, and it just worked out well that I was able to connect with Jake, get him on the schedule for this, and bring this all out to y'all. So again, thank you guys for listening, and that's all I have this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until next time, everybody, you guys stay safe out there, and like we always say, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.